and his team, Honorable Mazone. I don't know whether to call you a private member. But welcome to the committee, and all the staff of the committee and our interested parties, you are welcome. First, let me say we meet today waiting for the results of SA projection, which seems not to be good, and which requires an extra effort from the privileged individuals who are us, who happen to be sent to deal with all issues of national interest for our people. And I'm sure we will take that it might be requiring that we do more than we think we are doing or we can do. Safe to say also that there are quite a number of challenges that we continue to face. And I know this is our, for now, official in terms of the determination by the powers that be, that this is probably our last official sitting this week of Parliament. The rest, whatever we do, it is out of our own goodwill and our own passion probably for work to do. And therefore, I must say that it has been a bit of an uphill, but pleasure. I hope you won't stretch me when we come back again. You will continue to make my work much more easier as the chair. But having said so, are there any apologies?
Good morning, members and our guests. I've got an apology from the minister. He's attending the cabinet meeting. Thank you.
Okay, I guess that's the only apology we have. Honorable members, like we said before, we received the proposed bill. You will bear with me again, as I said, from Honorable Mazone. At that time, anyway, congratulations. You are not the chief whip, I assume. Congratulations. At least in the House, we've got two women who are in charge of the House. And we hope that with the two of you, the House will be a little bit orderly so that when the producers of the nation speak, all of us will be expected to follow the tune. So welcome to the committee. First, let me make this slight apology. I've learned the lesson from where I sit that one of the things we say in legislation, regardless where it comes from, is that you have to master the technicalities on how to process the legislation. Otherwise, even if it is the most brilliant, it gets easily challenged on the basis of not following the normal procedures or rules. That so you will bear with us. We have to ensure that whatever is done, we don't become the ones who will be accused at the end. I always say, rational and matured people politically, they disagree on conduct, and therefore we must manage so that we can engage on substantive issues. Not tomorrow to say when we are done, we are then told, no, from the word go, where you started, you are wrong. So we always get guidance also from Parliament on what procedures to follow, what has to be done. And we will do our level best to manage and master the procedural aspects. And the task of the members will be to deal with the content and substantive matters that arise out of this matter. But also having said so, I received, let me say, in advance, and I was told again the procedure allows it. I'm not saying the procedure, I'm saying I'm told. So when I'm guided, the procedure allows. I was initially informed that we need to notify the responsible executive authority, which is the department, also an opportunity to respond on what it is presented. And subsequently I've been informed that at this stage they will prefer to hear and get from the presentation, and then we'll then interact on when they will be able to make responses on the proposal. But I insisted that at least if the minister is not here, the team from the department must be here. So I hope, Bob Market, I'm correctly putting your request, which was granted. So today we only deal with the presentation from you, Honorable Mazoni, and then we will deal and manage the processes going forward on what has to be done. So having said so, I didn't want to introduce your delegation, even if it's one. So I will leave it to you to introduce your delegation. So the floor is yours.
Chairperson, thank you very much indeed. And thank you to all the members of the Energy and Mineral Resources Committee for inviting me today to present my private members' bill. Yes, Chair, we're a small delegation. We consider ourselves a squad. And with me is Mr. Marius Victor, who is the Executive Director of Legislation in the Chief Whip's Office. Chairperson, you are quite right. At the time of tabling this particular legislation, I was, in fact, the DA Shadow Minister of Public Enterprises. I served on that committee for a period of 8 years, and subsequent to that, I have become the Chief Whip, and I would like to thank you for your very kind words of encouragement, and I can guarantee you that myself and the ANC Chief Whip work exceptionally well together, and I look forward to a good working relationship in the House in general, led by the two of us. Chairperson, you said something very profound at the beginning of your statement. You said you weren't sure if you should refer to me as a private member. And I'm so pleased that you said that, because what I have come here today, and my intention of coming here today, is to come here as a South African citizen, first and foremost. Because I think that too often in politics we get bogged down by the fact that we all belong to different political parties. And we forget that we belong to the Parliament of South Africa and that we are first and foremost South Africans. So I would ask you, as we go through this presentation, to look at it as a presentation from someone who is deeply patriotic, who loves her country, and who is completely open to suggestions and to amendments as the committee sees fit, but as someone who is deeply concerned as to the security of the energy supply in South Africa. And instead of just complaining about something, I've taken it upon myself to try and effect a change that I think will be to the betterment of South Africa. So in your deliberations and in your concerns, please remember that I'm here as a member of Team South Africa. And I'm not here just as a politician. I'm here as a concerned South African who has drafted what I think is a piece of legislation that can surely go a long way to ensuring and securing the energy supply of South Africa. Chair, I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank my director of Executive Director of Legal Services, Marius Victor, who has worked extensively with the State Law Advisor and Parliamentary Legal Services. Chair, as you say, we learn as we go along. I learn as I go along. Every day in Parliament, I learn something new. And I do have in front of me, which I'm happy to circulate to your committee, a certificate in terms of the National Assembly Rule 2794. And it certifies that this bill is consistent with the Constitution and existing legislation. It does make a proviso that should this bill pass the motion of desirability in terms of the National Assembly Rule 28641, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor would propose that certain clauses be redrafted in a form and style which conforms to the legislative drafting practice. So that means that we are completely open to adapting this bill as required should it pass the muster of this particular portfolio. So, Chair, without further ado, and Maurice is going to very kindly operate the computer system, you would have received yesterday our proposed structure, and the way I'd like to go through this bill is having a look at the current electricity supply structure, the origins of the bill, the purpose of the bill, and the overview of the bill, and then go into the closing remarks. Chairperson, at the moment, Eskom Holding has a monopoly sharehold on the electricity supply structure in South Africa. They control production, and that is done through Eskom generation, IPP generation, and imports. They control transmission, which is done through cable networking, wholesaler, and single buyer structures. And they control retail, which is large customers, distributors, and municipalities. Now, I think it's very important that we understand the origins of this bill. The Independent Electricity Management Operator Bill, or as we'll now refer to it, EMO, builds on a foundation that was laid by the ISMO Bill, which was the Independent System and Market Operator Bill, which was an executive bill that was introduced in 2012. ISMO, funnily enough, passed the scrutiny of the Portfolio Committee on Energy and enjoyed unanimous support from all members. ISMO passed the muster of the National Assembly in a second reading debate held in November 2013. What is worrying, Chairperson, is that the bill was mysteriously formally withdrawn in March 2014 and was never revived or introduced again. And even though this bill was withdrawn, it was remained in a SONA debate of presidents past and present and was referred to many times. EMO builds on the healthy foundation laid down by ISMO to achieve the breaking up of Eskom into a more and better manageable entity and is in line with the policies of the national government. So what is the purpose of this bill? Why the reformation of this bill? What is EMO? Chairperson, EMO is the Independent Electricity Management Operator, and it relies on two critical aspects. Independence, which would be the generation, and distribution are separated. And electricity management focus. This means separate entity governing the buying and selling of electricity that does not have a stake in the production. Eskom is currently not in a position to fund substantial generation capacity increases, and the situation does not look like it's improving anytime soon. If Eskom was required to build all and fund the required new generation capacity, steep increases will be required, which will serve to the detriment of the end user who will fit the bill in the end. And Chair, if I can just elaborate on that, we've seen that through the NERSA hearings, that the required increases that come every year are not being granted. Steep increases will have a marked negative impact on the economy, and the South Africa's generation capacity is already in a critical condition, so we cannot afford to have the country remain in this unstable and insecure energy situation that it finds itself. Why is an independent operator necessary? Chair, it's commonly accepted that the electricity sector will require an additional electricity generation capacity to support future economic growth. ESCOM is not currently in the position to fund substantial generation capacity increases, and the situation will not improve anytime soon. Chair, I must add here that at last count, ESCOM's debt was to the tune of 420 billion rand and counting. If ESCOM was required to build all and fund the required new generation capacity, steep electricity prices would be required, and the detriment again would be the end user, which is the average South African. We would have a major impact on the economy. We've already seen companies pulling out because they simply cannot afford electricity costs, nor can they afford the risk of not having a secure energy supply. And Chair, we have to look at the reality of the situation. Not a day goes by now where ESCOM manages to not institute a warning on their website that we might face a possible load shedding incident. And Chair, it's now got to the point where ESCOM themselves no longer refer to it as load shedding, but a systematic rolling blackout that goes across the country. EMA will assist in opening up the electricity generation market to other stakeholders. Independent power producers will be given the opportunity to have the same access to electricity markets as ESCOM. Chair, if you allow me to pause just on that particular point, I want to make it very clear that what we mean by IPPs is not necessarily renewable energy. We are looking at every form of possible energy production that we could bring into South Africa to secure our energy supply. The IPP will take the risk of generation, and EMO will pay only for delivered electricity and supply stability. Chair, that is important. I want to reiterate what that says. EMO will pay only for delivered electricity and supply stability. So the risk is on EMO. Projects such as cogeneration will not require government guarantees and may come in at lower tariffs compared to the ESCOM build programs. EMO will assist in providing independent dispatch of power from all generators in an efficient manner to minimize cost to the consumer. Chair, we now enter the overview of the bill, which is what you as your committee is going to have to look at when it comes to the technicalities of this bill. And Chair, I wish to reiterate once again, we are not precious about this bill. This bill is here to act as a catalyst to what we hope will secure the energy supply of South Africa. Where you feel that there should be amendments, we are completely open to these amendments. So again, I want to reiterate, we are not dead set, and it will not be a train smash if this committee requires an amendment. We are completely open to that kind of discussion. The objects of the EMO bill are to establish EMO as a juristic person, to constitute EMO as a private company governed in terms of the public-private partnership, ensure the safe, secure, and efficient operation of the integrated power system and trading of electricity on a wholesale level, empower EMO as a buyer of electricity from a variety of generators in a transparent manner that promotes efficiency and effectivity, reinforce efficient dispatch and electricity generators in accordance with the dispatch rules imposed by the Electricity Regulation Act, provide for a joint planning mechanism for new generation capacity that aligns with government policy, and allows metropolitan municipalities to purchase electricity directly from electricity generators in certain circumstances. The functions of EMO are set out in Section 6 and are, amongst which, to manage the electricity system in an efficient manner that ensures financial viability, act as a trader of electricity in line with government policy. And what I'd like us all to take a minute here to notice is that nothing that we are suggesting would not be in line with government policy. Prepare appropriate input into and participate in the planning of electricity supply and greater transmission requirements. Take responsibility for the establishment, practice, and maintenance of the integrated power system, and ensure the efficient dispatch and distribution with the integrated power system. Now, we've already seen the current structure, but I've put it here just as a refresher so that we know exactly what we're dealing with. And if I may ask you to put the current structure next to your proposed structure. What you'll see in the proposed structure is you would see EMO going separating into planning, single buyer, and wholesaler. In the production, you would see Eskom generation, you would see IPP generation, and you would see imports. In transmission, you would see cable networks, and in retail, you would see large customers, distributions, and municipalities. The establishment as a private company, the Independent Electricity Manager Operator Limited, that would be its structure. So just to repeat that, it would be established as a private company. EMO will not be a state-owned entity, but it is also not an ordinary private company. There is a safeguard in that shareholding is limited. The state may not own shares. The number and price shares are set. It will function as a public-private partnership, very similar to that of the Reserve Bank. Rationale with the structure is to ensure that an operator will be representative of both the private sector interests and those of government. The impact of the structure is to be found in the way the board of EMO will be constituted. Chair, the EMO board will be managed by a board of 10 directors. The directors appointed as follows. There will be 5 ministerial appointees, the chairperson, the deputy chairperson, the chief financial officer, and 2 directors. Appointed by shareholders will be 5 members, an expert in electrical engineering, expert in financial matters, expert in economics, expert in environmental affairs, and an expert in law. What will the responsibilities of this board be? Chair, the board will give effect to the corporate plan of EMO to ensure that the entity achieves its objectives. It will act as an accounting authority. It will take decisions on behalf of EMO to ensure the execution of those decisions. It will provide guidance to the CEO. It will notify the minister immediately if any matter that materially affects the achievement of the objectives or financial targets of the entity are not met, and it will refer any matter that may adversely affect the functioning of EMO directly to the minister. Obviously, EMO rules will require a staff. Appointment of the chief executive officer and the chief financial officer. The board must invite applications for the CEO and CFO position. The board must, in consultation with the minister, appoint the CFO and the CEO. Both the CEO and the CFO must serve at the board as executive members. The CEO and CFO must have the expertise relevant to the EMO functions. The CEO may be appointed for a period of 5 years and may be reappointed for a second term. I hesitate to add the word may be appointed for a second term. Conditions of employment of the CEO and CFO. These positions must be advertised. The CEO and the CFO will be subject to the annual performance agreement. And Chair, if I may, one of the biggest problems and one of the reasons that state capture was allowed to take hold at Eskom was because the KPIs and the employment contracts were never made known, not to the Department of Energy and Mineral Resources, nor to the Department of Public Enterprises. So no one knew what the actual KPIs of any of the executive board members were. So come the end of the financial year, both committees were presented with a set of targets that were always met, but none of us were any the wiser as to what those KPIs were. So for all we know, a meeting could have happened in a boardroom late at night where KPIs that were easily attainable were agreed to and massive bonuses were linked to those particular KPIs. And I think as members of Parliament, once bitten, twice shy, we now know the effect of having a non-transparent KPI system in terms of executive and what a non-transparent KPI system can lead to, especially in terms of the cost structure and especially in terms of the possibility of the capturing of an entity. The appointment by the board will not exceed a period of 5 years. Remuneration packages must be approved by the minister in concurrence with the Minister of Finance. Termination of employment of the CFO and CEO. The board, with the concurrence of the minister, may terminate the employment of the CFO and CEO for misconduct and for failing to perform the duties connected with the office. And Chairperson, I hasten to add, it will be essential for this committee to know what the performance duties are. So this committee will have to know what the KPIs of these particular CFO and CEO are. The board may suspend services of the CEO and CFO pending misconduct proceedings. The CFO and CEO may resign by written notice of at least 30 days to the chairperson of the board. The board may in writing appoint a CEO or CFO. The acting CEO or CFO should have all the necessary powers to perform the duties related to the office. The CEO may enter into the employment agreement with a person for the performance of specific duties with recruitment policies approved by the board. So as you can see, as we go along in this presentation, transparency is key to the structure and the functioning of this EMO structure. All employees of Eskom Holding employed in the fulfillment of the functions contemplated in this Act, including support staff, will be transferred to EMO. Now, this is essential to note because one of the questions that I've had and has been raised numerous times is what about immense job losses? Now, we have a country where over 10 million South Africans are unemployed, and I think it would be very naive of us to think that we would be adding to the solution to the problem if we increased the unemployment problem. So what we are saying here is there is a lot of maneuverability in this particular bill to ensure that Eskom Holding employees are transferred to EMO. Personnel may be transferred or seconded to EMO from the public service, subject to provision from the Public Service Act. So there is already an act in existence that we can use to simply supplement this particular bill. Now, very important would be the funding and financial accounting of EMO, because once again, we come from the background of state capture, and it's an embarrassment to come from a background of state capture, and it's something that I think we can all agree we avoid at all costs. It will never happen in South Africa again. Loans and government guarantees for loans. The state may grant loans to EMO for money made available by Parliament. EMO may pay interest on such loan at a rate determined by the Minister in concurrence with the Minister of Finance. EMO must, no later than 30 days of each financial year, submit its business plan and financial plan for the following year for the approval of the Minister. The business plan and the financial plan for the first year must be submitted within 90 days of incorporation. Any submitted business plan and financial plan must include the following: projects and operational costs, planned performance indicators, and a statement with estimated income and expenditure for the financial year. What we don't want is a surprise at the end of the financial year. So we want upfront, correct estimations so that we know exactly what we'll be dealing with. Funds and assets. The funds and assets may consist of assets and rights transferred to EMO, funds acquired from performance of its functions, and shareholder contributions. All normal costs of EMO must be recovered from tariffs and fees and charges permitted through legislation. EMO may not dispose the majority of its assets without approval of the Minister and the Minister of Finance, and EMO may refuse to provide part of its service until such time as a customer has paid outstanding fees. Chair, if you just excuse me. I'm sorry, I'm suffering from a summer cold. So it's 16 days. Chairperson, 2 days to December, and my voice knows all about it. Now, Chair, what is new and what I think is very exciting, and I hope that this committee agrees with me, is the introduction of metropolitan municipalities. Metros will be allowed to purchase electricity directly from a generator if that metro has the following: showed competency, proficiency, and innovation in the management and maintenance of its electricity reticulation, received a clean financial audit for the preceding financial year, and procured energy in an open and transparent manner and in accordance with competitive bidding processes. EMO will be entitled to charge a fee for the use of any infrastructure involved in the transmission of electricity from a generator as a qualifying metro. This will help metros cut out the middleman and pass the savings on to the end user, which is the South African public and also big business. Now, when it comes to regulations, the minister may promulgate regulations regarding functioning of the board, incidental administrative to ensure effective functioning of the board. Regulations must be drafted after consultation of the board and with cabinet on policy-related matters. The proposed policy must be tabled in Parliament before publication in the Government Gazette. So once again, there is no way EMO in its structure can hide or try and dupe Parliament or the executive into any functioning, because it will come to Parliament and it must pass parliamentary muster before it even goes into the Government Gazette. Transitional provisions. The Minister may, in consultation with Cabinet, determine a date for the transfer of the functions of EMO. EMO must enter into contractual agreements with Eskom for the execution of the functions, and these contracts must be finalised within 3 months of the incorporation date. The Minister must publish in the Government Gazette a notice with a date for the transfer of assets. Within the time frame stipulated in the notice, Eskom must compile a list of assets and liabilities to be transferred to EMO. The EMO board must consider the list and consult with Eskom where necessary. Upon agreement between the board and Eskom, the minister must determine, through a notice in the Gazette, the assets and liabilities to be transferred to EMO, including the date for the transfer. Now, obviously, Chair, it is important that the board and Eskom and the minister must determine these, because what you don't want is you don't want Eskom fobbing off something that is actually not an asset onto EMO. Because what we're trying to do here is we're trying to optimise on the assets that we already have as South Africans to ensure that the transfer of assets simply strengthens EMO and doesn't put it in a weakened position. Chair, if you'll allow me my closing remarks. This bill is the first legislative process that works towards the rationalisation of Eskom. Chair, I appeal to the Portfolio Committee to apply serious consideration to the concepts proposed in the bill. We have a responsibility as legislators to address the matters that are the most pressing to the interests and the well-being of all South Africans. I urge the committee to consider the use of this bill as a first step towards reforming the electricity supply sector in South Africa. And Chair, if you will allow me, my 8 years in public enterprises have taught me how dangerous a monopoly stranglehold of an electricity supply can be on a country. And the time has come, and I'm willing to do this, and I've said so from word go in every speech I've ever given in the House. I'm willing to put aside political ideology, and I'm willing to be pragmatic in my approach to this particular bill, as well as pragmatic in my approach to anything that the committee may require from me. I'm here first and foremost as a patriotic South African who wants only the best for my country and only the best for economic growth in my country. The objective is to get the 10 million unemployed South Africans re-employed in the South African market. The objective is to grow the South African economy. And Chairperson, if we put our political ideologies aside and we sit together around the table as South Africans, I know that we can find the way forward. Chairperson, I thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mazwane, for your presentation. Because we are dealing with a legislation, I'm trying to find a better way. I'm told we've got the parliamentary legal advisor. Please, they didn't give me your name, so don't say I didn't call. You know, township boys like us, we end up calling you Mike instead of Michael. Is it Michael Prince? Okay, you are welcome. Please, let me tell you my bad experience with Parliament, whether on capacity or what. at some point we were dealing with the legislation. We ended up with three or four advisors. Because one moment we were told, now you can't get this one. So you have to rebrief the other one who is coming. Let me hope that we're not going to experience the same. That when we need you, we're told, no, we can't get you now. We'll get somebody else. And the risk is that you end up with two political advisors from the same institution. Just pass my request that because you are here, you are the only one who is privileged, who can help us. Or you can try and brief others so that when that person comes in here, we are not caught off guard again. But you are welcome. Okay, honorable members, any questions of clarity or comments? Okay. Honorable, is your hand up? Oh, it's Honorable Mahlaule. Honorable Zungula, is Honorable Kula, Honorable Phillips, is Honorable Tenja. Then it's Honorable Malinga. Now the reason I was saying this is that by tradition, we usually allow members, all of them, to ask. But because we are dealing with the legislation, it must be precise. I'll give you Honorable Mahlaule. You ask your questions and your comments, and then Honorable Mazoni and Victor, they will respond. And then we'll go to Honorable Zongula. Kanjalo.
Sir, It was in.
Don't start with my meeting, please. Can we be in the meeting? Honorable Mahlaule.
No. Chair, and
will that Honorable Mazoni, will that take questions from one man? If we are called in court, but we will then deal with those questions and then we'll go to the next one.
No, thanks, Chair. And let me welcome the presentation from Ms. Mazoni. I hope I got it right this time. Chair, I don't necessarily want to pose questions. There are a whole lot of range of issues that one has gone through. Because it's not a secret that these documents were forwarded to us before. So one could have interacted with them at their spare time. And there's a whole range of issues that I want to speak to without necessarily bringing questions, and at the end probably try to offer a solution. So I don't know, with your permission, the whole range of issues. Maybe you need to probably allow other people to speak before I get into that, because I have noted my points from the interaction with the discussion and formulated probably how we must move forward. Okay. No, thanks, Jack. The first issue I want to say up front is that the establishment of what you call EMO as a private company is problematic in itself. The notion that competition can only be ensured when there is private sector or it's privatized is not entirely true. I'm saying this, Chair, because this bill or the proposed bill had to be juxtaposed with many documents. Amongst others, it's the roadmap for Eskom in a reformed electricity supply industry that I'm holding here from the Department of Public Enterprise. That, amongst other things, speaks about the unbundling of Eskom into three entities. And it says when it comes to transmission that it will unbundle that into two, if I'm not mistaken, and outline what the functions would be. Now, the unbundling of Eskom suggests that there will be generation which may have three or two plants competing with each other internally under Eskom holdings, meaning there will still be public entities competing amongst each other. You go to transmission, the same will be done, and one or two entities competing with each other. I'm just trying to say the notion, if the issue here of privatization is to maximize efficiency, effectiveness, and all of that, it can be done with the unbundling of internal and having subsidiaries of Eskom from within. It's also problematic, Chair, this bill, because its function, as suggested, it will perform the mandate of the state, meaning the security of supply of electricity, the planning and operations will be done by a private company. And here we are saying the proposed functions of the transmission entity by the Eskom roadmap says the planning, construction, operation, and maintenance and transmission of the grid will be done by a transmission entity. Secondly, the systems operator, which will be managing supply and demand balances in real time through the range of least cost options, will be done by that. The market operator within the transmission entity will be dealing with the contracting with suppliers and distributors, including the Eskom distribution. Now, it can't be that the function of a public entity now, we want it to be done by a private entity. It's problematic. The bill creates a private company to execute a public function, in my view. It seeks to transfer Eskom's assets and employees responsible for these functions to a private company. Now, there is a proposal here that seeks to say the migration of people, systems, assets, and debt into a new transmission entity, as well as the enactment of appropriate legislation through Parliament to enable the transmission entity to be taken out as a separate state-owned company. It's the same thing. The point is, it will be done within a public entity, which is under Eskom Holdings, or which is still Eskom Holdings. Now, another problematic issue is that this bill proposes to recover operational costs from tariff fees and charges to customers. It can't be. This bill also, in its posing, it chooses its customers, and that is in your clause 37. It chooses to exclude, to include at its discretion, who is a customer. And I'm saying this because it seeks to treat municipalities differently. It then says metros versus others, which is problematic because there are municipalities that are part of this process as we speak. You can't refer to only metros as customers to the electricity issue. Now, the proposal says 5 board of directors will come from the minister. The other 5 comes from the private shareholder. The relationship is not expanded. It's not explained. The relationship between the minister and the shareholders is not explained properly. Now, with that said, Chair, what is to be done? The ISMO bill, Chair, I propose that the ISMO bill, which has borne this EMO bill, maybe we need to appeal to Cabinet or instruct Cabinet to relook at the ISMO bill, not this EMO, ISMO bill, and mandate the department to resubmit the 2012 bill. The reason we are proposing this is that it must seek to align with what is happening now from the Department of Public Enterprise. It can't be that we are enacting a bill here, public enterprise is busy with the unbundling of ESCOM, because they are busy. When you look at this roadmap, they even tick a box on where they are, meaning some of the things are done, and they are done in phases. So we need to align this issue with the current status of the industry. We are saying that, Chair, the EMO bill, maybe this is the last point, should not be supported at all, as it goes against the mandate of the state as outlined above. I've mentioned that there are certain sections that private entities can't be performing on behalf of the state because it's the function of the state. That is my submission, Chair, that this bill be not supported on the basis of many things that are not aligned to the current discussion that is happening in the country, that of ISMO, that of EMO, and that of the roadmap. And we are not saying the bill must be totally thrown out. The bill must come, discuss with the other two to find each other and be relevant to the current industry needs and align itself to public-owned ESCOM holdings, not a private entity that will be responsible for our electricity in the country. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be answering some of the questions, and my colleague, Mr. Victor, will be answering some of those. Honourable Member, competition is necessary in a growing economy. And where you don't have competition, you have price fixing, and you have price increases that go beyond the means of certainly any South African, and certainly where the vast majority of South Africans live below the poverty line. You simply cannot deny the fact that competition brings prices down. Now, you and I obviously have very different ideological perspectives on many things, but we have to be pragmatic in the fact that a stranglehold monopoly such as ESCOM has failed, and has failed dismally. Now, you juxtaposed the EMO bill to the roadmap of ESCOM. I've seen in my career in Parliament about, I think on last count, it was 13 different roadmaps that ESCOM would present on an annual basis, dependent on who at the time was the CEO and who at the time was pulling the strings. Because we have to be very honest with one another. ESCOM was stripped bare by the parasites that executed state capture. It is that simple. The company, the state-owned entity, that was the most affected by state capture is Eskom. And the remnants of state capture remain to this day. The fact that Kusile is not complete is because of state capture. The fact that Medupi is not complete is because of state capture. The fact that you have a middle management that is bloated and overinflated by almost 400 people is because of state capture. And the very architects of state capture were in charge of this monopoly that literally held the country to ransom. So you have a fundamental problem in that Eskom in itself is bankrupt. And there's no nice way of putting that. There's no way we can sugarcoat it. There's no way that we can make that look better to the South African public or to any foreign investor. Eskom is unable to continue as a going concern without continual bailouts from the South African public. And that's not me speaking. That is fact. Eskom is effectively bankrupt. They have a 420 billion rand and counting debt, which they will never be able to pay back. And that is a reality that we have to face. We also have to face the very stark reality that we do not have a secure energy supply in our country. So we can sit in this room and we can argue ideologies. We can argue government roadmaps. We can argue cabinet ideas going forward. We can argue Plan 2029. We can argue Plan 2030. The fact of the matter is, even yesterday, Eskom put us on alert for going into a period of rolling blackouts. So what happens on a daily basis, Honourable Member? Companies that should be investing in South Africa, that should be employing South Africans, are leaving our country and they are going onto the continent where they have a secure and sustainable source of energy and an affordable energy supply. Now let's be realistic about this. This problem didn't only start in 1994. This problem came back many years from when Eskom was actually designed to provide electricity for 5 million South Africans, because that's essentially what happened. So we've had this massive growth and Eskom simply cannot keep up with requirements. We have lost essential skills. That's why at times Eskom has had to bring in skills from overseas, especially when it comes to dealing with our coal supply. We've had numerous, Honourable Member, I've lost count of the charges of corruption that I've laid against ex-Eskom officials. So I've put it to you the following. You are fundamentally against the E-Mobile, because you want Eskom Holdings to be the umbrella body over three entities. Honourable Member, I'd put it to you that you want a bankrupt company looking after three entities that are going to be bankrupt because the umbrella body, the mother body, is in and of itself bankrupt. Eskom has got to the point where it cannot self-correct. It is impossible. You could put the very finest businessmen and businesswomen in the world at the helm of Eskom, and they will tell you it is far past the point of fixing the problem. The design is archaic, and breaking Eskom, the unbundling of Eskom into three entities, is simply paying lip service to try and get the South African public to buy into some kind of idea that things are changing. But when your umbrella holding company is bankrupt, you have no option but to start selling to the private market. Now, I must say this, Honourable Member. It is not a true private company. And it is not a true private company, and this is EMO, because EMO will be dealing with a minister on a continual basis. Now, I know, I've come into this meeting already knowing what your concerns are, because I'm not naive. I know what your ideological principles are. I know what mine are. So I've come in trying to meet you halfway, because that's what we do when we present a piece of legislation. Because I don't want you to throw this out wholesale because Natasha Mazzoni from the DA has presented you this piece of legislation.
Point of order. Hold on, Honourable Mazzoni. What's the order? Chairperson, I think we're going to have a serious problem here. Because
because when we listen carefully now, the honorable member just said that she came here knowing exactly what are we going to answer or what are we going to seek clarity to. So this now gives us the serious problem. Because it preempts everything now. Maybe we're supposed to, what we're supposed to do now is just to, for you, Chairperson, to finish this meeting, because there's no purpose for us to carry on. Because she says, yeah, she came here knowing exactly what are we going to ask. That is seriously out of order.
Can I help you, Honorable?
Yeah.
Wait, Honorable Mazoni. You see the problem, I always say when I chair a meeting, let's concentrate. And now I don't want to come there and then come to you. When I say let me help, because that when you say she needs help, that interpretation changes from what is the meaning of what I was saying. What the point though I was saying was that my understanding of the statement, which is what was said anyway from earlier on, was that we are all different political parties. And when you come to a meeting of this nature, I don't want to use ideology, by the way. They could be ideological, but sometimes they could be political differences that would come. But when the statement is qualified by saying, I come and meet you halfway, it's a fact. This is the ANC, you know, the background of the DA, we shouldn't hide it. It's quite difficult to assume that those two in particular, I want to be frank and honest, those two in particular would agree. That's how I understood as a political statement. But probably it would have been more out of order, it would have been out of order if it was not qualified with the statement that says, even when I understood that, I came with that understanding. Mine is to meet. The question will be, is it really meeting halfway? That is what the meeting will have to make a conclusion. Whether is there a meeting halfway? So can we leave? I always say our meetings are political and they will not change. Continue, Honorable Madam.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I've read the ANC manifesto and I read it with great interest. And that's why I know what the ANC concept and the way the ANC wants to look at the energy suppliers. And maybe that will make the Honourable Member feel a little less upset by the statement. I read manifestos. I read press releases. I read statements released by Cabinet. That's what I do. I'm a politician, and it's my job to be informed. I need to be informed as to what different political parties' perspectives in terms of the energy sector are. And I think that's my job. So, Chair, I'm going to pass over to Honourable Victor now, but I do want to just say this. This is a good bill. This is a bill that works for the betterment of South Africa. Is it perfect? By no means. And that's why I started out by saying I'm quite happy for there to be amendments, but what I wouldn't want to see is an outright refusal to even acknowledge and to enter into some form of negotiation of how we can find each other on this specific bill, because I am still convinced that Team South Africa is stronger than any one political party. And I mean it very, very seriously when I say I'm willing to look at the ways in which we can make people feel comfortable while ensuring an energy supply and a secure energy supply to South Africa. Mr. Victor?
Honourable members, I have two aspects that I'd like to touch on that the Honourable Member raised. The first pertains to EMO being selective when it comes to its customers. As a member of the drafting team, I cannot recall including a clause where EMO can select to whom it wants to sell electricity and to whom it does not. The Honourable Member cited Clause 37. This may have been an erroneous citation, but Clause 37 deals with EMO tariffs, fees, and charges. Nowhere in the seven sub-clauses of Clause 37 does it mention the selective nature of with whom it does business. Where the bill does touch on selective business is from whom it buys electricity. It's not to whom it sells. EMO will sell electricity to all wholesalers, all large distributors, because that is essentially what it will be doing. It will be distributing electricity. It has the choice in who it buys from, but it doesn't have the choice to whom it sells. The second aspect is a very interesting one. It's the one regarding the selective inclusion of metropolitan municipalities. Now, this was a purposeful inclusion. If we consider recent remarks from the minister, I can't exactly remember when the remark was made, but the minister said something to the effect of that he would like to see municipalities having the right to purchase electricity directly. And it's a very interesting remark, because that is what Honorable Mazzoni's ideal will be as well. But the reason that this section has been worded in the way that it has been worded is effectively we have a situation where we have a bunch of sick cattle in one kraal. So what do? Do you just open the gate and let them all run wild? No, you don't. You open the gate and you selectively let them pass one by one, to see whether they can stand on their own feet, whether they're healthy. That's effectively what we're doing here. We're singling out metropolitan municipalities as one category of municipalities to be almost a legislative pilot project to see whether this works. And if it works, then we roll out the others. It's just selective. It's just to make sure that there is a hand on the tiller, that the minister and the department can see how this works, how it's implemented, so that it informs a further rollout of municipalities to be able to purchase electricity directly. That is the end goal. We are all working towards the same goal. It's just a slower rollout. Thank you.
I just want to say two things because they were responding to my point, and I finished so that it goes elsewhere. The first point is that if the minister has agreed to the latter point and he agrees with the presentation by Honorable Mazzoni on municipalities, we are not a department. We are a portfolio committee who at times differ with the minister. So coming here and suggest that we should agree with the minister, we are not agreeing. If he has said it, wherever he said it, we are not agreeing. We are putting a position of the portfolio committee. So let's be clear on that one.
What's the order?
Chair, the honourable member can't say that he's putting the position of the portfolio committee when the position of the portfolio committee has not yet been determined. Honourable, he's putting his position. It's not the position of the portfolio committee at this point.
Honourable, my name. Can I help you?
Are you a department?
Wait, Honorable. I can't help both of you at the same time now. You are making my work more difficult. Can I help you? The reason I always allow members to speak and finish is my duty for the chair, only if I did not correct that. For now, I'm free. There are many things I can correct now. I agree with you, but when the member still keeps speaking, you've got every right when I summarize and point out on certain things that should be done to say, but Chair, one issue that is left here is that there was a statement, like I said in the last meeting, that if a statement is made and is not corrected in the meeting, that statement becomes a position of the meeting. For now, let's allow members to be free. I will correct that. For instance, let me tell you, I could have said some of the things long term, but I don't want a member to feel when he's in the committee, hey, I'm constrained every time I say this, then the chairperson is putting me on the line. For instance, some of the things the department has not presented. It has not presented. We don't know what it's going to say. Some of the things that we're putting here, they may not necessarily be required until you get the side of the department. That's point one. Point two, some of the issues, with all due respect, they are a subject of a discussion that will be an outcome, because the committee is still going to discuss now its perspectives and views. And so please, can I not that I'm saying you are wrong, I'm saying the timing. Can we, I want all of you to be free, but can we stick to the substance
of the presentation. The last thing I would want to say, I don't want for us to go to, we will explain the procedures, even how you refer a bill. Even a bill that might be sitting and not referred to by the executive. We will try and explain some of those things at the end of the meeting so that we clarify members. But again, lastly, I always say, when somebody presents, and I can say this, you do that in the House anyway, honors, to say to the minister, the House chairpersons and the Speaker and Deputy Speaker would say when a question is asked or is raised, say, no, the minister is capable enough. You will answer the question. If that question is a new question, it's up to the minister to answer that question or not. I'm protective, but at the same time, I don't want to reduce people who come in front of the committee that they are not capacitated enough. If you feel, again, let me say this with all qualifications, if you feel equally like the members, you are allowed to say, but I think this kind of a question or a statement is now going beyond what I think is the purpose of me being here. Okay. Can you summarize, Honorable Masaule?
Chair, I'm saying that as members of the Portfolio Committee, we are not a department. We are not members of the department. So if you happen to agree with the minister, there would be some of the members in the Portfolio Committee who do not agree with that on that point. I just wanted it to be noted and be on record. The second point from Ms. Mazoni is that on her last point, before she gave to Mr. Victor, she said that she understands that it's not a bill that we are supposed to just take and all of that. I made a point at the end that let's align, let's take it back so that it aligns with everything else, meaning we are open for it to be discussed and engaged. I don't want a situation where we leave here, Ms. Mazoni, because I said it must not be accepted, but you choose not to take the point where I said, let's mature the discussion, not wholeheartedly throwing it out. I just wanted that point to be on record as well.
Thank you very much, and that point is on record, and I thank you very much for that engagement. I think it's going to be very fruitful. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I want to welcome the presentation, and I'll shoot straight to the point to say the issue of energy in our country is a basic need for majority, in fact, for all of us as citizens. Therefore, by having a private entity that will have significant control in that space in itself, that is problematic. And we've seen how private companies and even some SOEs having business interests that do not make social sense. I'll make an example of Soweto, where poor, unemployed people are forced to pay electricity, whereas they are not working. And the question is, where will they get the money to pay? Now, we cannot be having such an important part of our society being in private hands. Because what I'm picking up here is that this IMO is disguised, in fact, it is disguised privatization. Yet the funding and the loans may come from the state. That is what the presentation says. Again, the model is meant to benefit the IPPs instead of Eskom, unless maybe Eskom gets a mandate at least 65% of the IPP allocation. Lastly, the greatest concern from my side is this is a long-term strategy to actually shut down Eskom in the future. and have it replaced by IPPs. And in fact, it is a strategy to privatize electricity. And again, what I said in the beginning, that we cannot be having, especially if you look at the demographics of our country, have electricity being predominantly privatized. So in my view is that in the current form, we cannot support this proposed bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Zungulu. You are quite... Zungula. Chair, someone... Chair, I understand completely. Imagine being called Mazzone and everyone calls you Mazzoni. I understand better than most a mispronunciation. Honorable Member, I would put it to you that a state-owned entity is problematic. And I'm very glad that you brought up Soweto, because I was invited twice in my portfolio committee and once by a petition to Orlando East in Soweto. And this is what Eskom did. In the dead of night, Eskom went into a particular area in Orlando East. They installed private meters that no one knew about. People woke up in the morning to have no electricity. These private meters were outside. It hadn't been explained to people how to purchase electricity. No one had any idea how the meter boxes worked. Most of the meter boxes were faulty. And the most important thing was the basic supply, the free energy supply, hadn't been loaded onto any of the meters. So what happened was, and this is, I mean, we're talking about the poorest of the poor, the most vulnerable of society. They would go to a Checkers or a ShopRite and buy electricity. They would purchase 100 rand of electricity. And by the time they went back to Orlando East and loaded it onto their meters, they had 78 rand worth of electricity. So we called Eskom out. Eskom came. They sent one individual who, I must say, stood like a shaking leaf because he simply didn't have the answers. He couldn't explain where the money had gone. The meters that didn't work, they still don't work to this day, so people don't have electricity. So what you have is people being forced to create Isinyoka cables because they require electricity and their meters aren't working. So I've seen firsthand in Soweto exactly the kind of trouble that Eskom can cause. So this is a state-owned entity whose job it is to be looking after citizens, and certainly the citizens that are the most vulnerable of society. And they've done exactly the opposite. And there is a very, very good report that the Department of Public Enterprises did following one of our visits. And I believe it's on Hansard. And Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to have that report sent to the Energy Committee so that you can read through the report of just exactly how damning Eskom's behavior in Soweto, and more especially in the Orlando East area that we as a committee visited, was. We had over 1,000 people come to the Orlando East Hall, Community Hall, and present to us their bills. We walked around, we went to their meters, and it was appalling. So I don't see a state-owned entity that's working in the best interest of South Africans. And I'm seeing, what I'm seeing in ISMO, in EMO rather, is an opportunity for, especially in an area like Eskom, where people have a basic grant that is due to them, you'll have a company that's capacitated to ensure that they actually get the basic grant. Because the way Eskom is structured at the moment, especially in Soweto, and it's one of the reasons that Soweto's debt is as high as it is because when people purchase electricity, because Eskom thought they'd solve the debt by putting in prepaid meters. It's great to put in prepaid meters. I'm a prepaid meter fan myself. But what about the basic services? That wasn't loaded. Why is 100 Rand being turned into 78 Rand? These things aren't being explained. And the community is getting increasingly more desperate. And desperation calls for desperate measures. And that's why we are having children electrocuted on the streets. It's why there's cable theft. I mean, if one looks at it from a holistic point of view, so many things start adding up because people are left in situations of sheer desperation. And when you're there, and I didn't understand it. I was honestly one of those people that was like, well, people that steal electricity are just thieves and, you know, that was my initial reaction until I went there. And you see the most vulnerable of society who have no lights. They have to catch taxis at night. They walk home in pure darkness. They go into a house in pure darkness. The children can't do their homework. You can't cook. You can't heat water. In the year 2019, no South African should be living in that kind of situation. And it's my belief that IMO will go a long way to rectify that. Mr. Victor is going to explain a little bit about the funding structure.
Thank you, Honourable Member. It was actually a very good thing that you raised the funding structure and referring to the slide itself. Yes, it is true that the slide pointed out that loans can be granted by national government to IMO, but this wasn't set out as the only source of funding or the only source of financing. It was actually highlighted to illustrate the special nature in which this company functions. Now, you are very correct in saying that it is a private company. It most certainly is. But that's not where it stops. As Honourable Mazzoni pointed out, it is not an ordinary private company. It has been suggested as a private company because there is no other business form in which the public-private partnership governance model that the bill proposes, in which it can find execution without obviously creating an entirely new business form, which we don't necessarily want to do. Going into and answering your concern specifically regarding loans issued by government, it's not only government from whom IMO would be able to obtain loans should they need to do so. Clause 37, sub 7, sub A, provides that IMO may borrow money or arrange for facilities to be made available to it and to meet its capital and operational requirements. This is in the normal course of business. Honourable Mazzoni highlighted the loans from the state to reinforce, as I mentioned earlier, to reinforce the special relationship that IMO as an entity has with the department, with the minister, and with national government. Insofar as the tariffs are concerned, all of IMO's normal costs must be recovered from tariffs, fees, charges to IMO customers. Now, the customers aren't the end users, they're the distributors. Provided that IMO must not be allowed to recover a tariff, fee, or charge to the extent that it is prohibited by legislation or regulation from levying such a charge or service charge. Now, these tariffs, and that's, I'll concede that this is always worrying, how will they decide on these tariffs? Are they just going to bump up the price and then nobody can afford electricity? That's obviously not a situation that one would ever want to happen. So IMO's tariffs, and this is also provided for in Clause 37 of the bill, IMO's tariff applications and also the tariffs themselves must be made to NAVSA, and this must be done in line with regulations and set procedures. So again, it's not a case of reinventing the wheel and just taking away the regulation there. There will still be a firm hand on this. There will still be control. It's not going to be a case that IMO will just be setting tariffs. It's not a case that IMO will just be draining the state fiscus with the various loans and guarantees that are to be issued. As I said, these were matters that were highlighted by Honourable Mazzoni just to make sure that the differentiation, just what sets it apart and what makes it this special public enterprise, if I can call it that, what makes it so special. Thank you.
No, and Yabulela, yes, Lalo. Firstly, man, let me say, as Chair, there's something very disturbing to me. This bill comes to this committee with its eyes closed and pretends as if there are no plans currently in place to unbundle Eskom. This bill wants to pretend as if Eskom is in this state, will always be in this state, and it can never turn itself around. I don't think it's an assumption I would agree with. The fundamental question I want to ask Honorable Mazzoni, I think it's Corinne Mazzoni, yes, Honorable Mazzoni, is about breaking the strength load of ESCOM or about securing a consistent supply of security in the country. Because I think that's what is important, that we should be concerned more about securing that there's always a consistent supply of electricity in the country than breaking the stronghold of Eskom. And I've got a problem with this because you move from a premise that if you don't have competition, you will have price fixing. The reality is that price fixing is taking place on a grand scale in the private sector. It is there, it is documented. The private sector is going all out. There's proof, there's past proof. So I think it's an incorrect presumption to move from that. No, if we don't have competition, we'll always have a problem of price fixing. You say that the bill will benefit the people of this country. I want to put it to you directly. The biggest beneficiaries of this IMO bill, is it going to be the people of South Africa or the independent power producers? Because in my own view is that it will benefit independent power producers. If you look at the model, you suggest that it should be a private company governed in terms of principle of private-public partnership. But it can be able to get loans from government. I find that particular aspect quite problematic. Okay? How do we encourage that government out to assist certain private companies to establish themselves? How do we justify such a motivation that there are private companies that can be able to be funded by government? I would say that I maintain that we can't entrust, no matter under what conditions, we can't leave the supply of electricity, the distribution of electricity, and all other aspects pertaining to electricity in this country to private hands. Yeah? What is special about the private sector? There's nothing special. The people have got responsibility. Who have been truly elected to govern, to take decisions, it is ourselves. We can never cede the role that must be played by government to private entities. We can never surrender our power to private entities. I agree with what Honorable Makaule said, that no, let us take the ISMO bill, let's take these bills, and say, let us have a discussion on both the bills, as my last point, Chairperson. Let's have a discussion and say, which model is best for South Africa? Set aside all the issues that they address issues on the basis of their objectivity. As a parting shot, Chairperson, in part of the functions you envisage for this EU, you say it will act as a trader of electricity in line with government policy. Which government policy? Which government policy will it act in line with? So that we understand. We live here, we can understand that no, your IMO bill is going to act in line with this particular government policy. I'll stop it there, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable Mason, let me say this. Unfortunately, again, as I said at the end, I will outline.
My apologies, Chair. There's an issue I left there.
So that you don't come back and then say you want.
Well, I don't
yeah. Okay, so is that a point of order?
It's just a point of privilege, Chair. Could the honourable member sit a little bit away from the microphone? It's very loud. I'm sorry.
There are people who are always loud, but maybe they've got a license to be loud, so we welcome that license of theirs. The bill is quite silent on the role that existing subsidiaries of Eskom are going to play, you know, Rotec and Hodgkin. So what role do you envisage these subsidiaries playing in your own bill? Are they going to then cease to exist? Thank you very much.
Okay. The point I wanted to say, honestly, let me repeat what I've called it. I'm appointed as a chairperson of the committee. Can we all put that in our mind? I'm not appointed as a facilitator of disputes. Otherwise, please take me to a course so that I know that the purpose of a meeting is to assist the chairperson to understand what is the direction towards a solution. Not because sometimes I get the sense as we continue to debate that now you must stop this one and then stop this one. No, that's not my duty. One day I will tell you here, I will sit and fold my arms and just say when members are done with whatever they do and say the meeting is closed and leave. So can we all try to assist the meeting so that the chair does not have a responsibility of learning mediation and facilitation skills. I do have them, but not for a meeting that I chair. Honorable Mazon.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I rather like a loud voice. At least you know there's a little bit of passion. Honorable Kula, the breaking of the stranglehold of the Eskom monopoly is key in ensuring a secure energy supply. Because as we sit here today, no matter how loud we raise our voices, Eskom is broken. 420 billion rand is owed by Eskom. They cannot finance their debt. They cannot pay their staff. They cannot maintain their power stations. They cannot purchase coal. So I put it to you that if you are insinuating that I don't know what plans Eskom have in place, I think you think I'm very naive. And I've been called many things in my life. Naive is not one of them. I know exactly what plans Eskom has in place. I know exactly what plans Eskom has tried to implement from the days of Brian Dahmer's, and I've watched them fail. And they failed, and I'm going to be perfectly frank about this, because Eskom, for many years, has been used as a cash cow to pay the looters of state capture. That is now an undisputable fact. You spoke about undisputable facts. If you turn on the TV right now, Judge Zondo is dealing with one of the aspects of Eskom state capture. This Parliament did an entire inquiry into state capture at Eskom. The entity is broken because of state capture. A once great and proud entity is broken because of state capture. It's by no means just happens that Medupi overruns by 8 years, hundreds of billions of rands over cost. These things don't just happen. They happen because they're designed to happen. It happens when you join the dots of state capture. It happens when you find the coal mines and the evergreen contracts. They all the dots join together. So it's not my opinion that the entity is broken. It's consensus that the entity is broken. And that's why the finance minister, it's why the energy minister, it's why the public enterprises minister, and it's now why the justice minister are looking at those responsible for breaking this entity. Honourable Member, people are being arrested from our ranks because of the involvement that they had in Eskom and state capture. This isn't a figment of my imagination. I don't come before you with rose-tinted glasses and try and present a story, a fairy tale that I want to make up for you. I come and present you with the facts. Because the facts are, the way Eskom is at the moment, it's irreversible. And if you'll allow me, it is not the only state-owned entity that we've turned a blind eye to for many years in the hope that it can self-rectify. We have a state entity at the moment that is now going to have to go a rapid transition in the way it operates if it wishes to carry on as a going concern. So, I mean, no one wants to see an entity like Eskom fail. But what you have to appreciate is that privatization is not an evil. In the world in which we live today, the way the world operates, not just South Africa, the way the world operates, because we operate as a global player, we have to understand that countries enter into private-public partnerships. And I've been very careful in the way I've drafted this particular piece of legislation so that it includes the input of the minister, the input of government, down to the fact that the board will have five people appointed by the minister. That's what makes it an unusual private company. So you say if it goes into private hands, we have no security. Honourable member, we have no security now. Eskom could turn us off at any time. Eskom has proved over and over again, despite numerous guarantees, that it cannot produce a secure energy supply. So what are we going to do? Are we going to sit here and say, only the state can provide us electricity? Only the state can secure an energy supply? Well, then the South African public are going to turn around and call us liars, because the state cannot provide us with a secure energy supply. So you have to ask yourself a fundamental question. What scares you so much about an independent producer? What is it about an IPP that you find so fundamentally offensive? Because the rest of the world looks at things from a pragmatic point of view, but in South Africa, we tend to see anything that has the word privatization as an evil, as a devil, which is not the case. The government will still have an intrinsic role to play in this particular company. And that's why this act has been drafted, this particular bill has been drafted in the way it has been drafted. And you ask, what pieces of legislation are we going to use? If you have a look at the actual bill, we refer to numerous pieces of legislation that are currently in existence. One of the pieces of legislation and one of the concepts that we look at is the role that NERSA plays. So that NERSA makes sure that we don't have price fixing in the market. But what I can tell you is this. It is fundamentally unfair for us not to be able to choose the kind of electricity we want to use. It is fundamentally unfair to tell South Africans that they may only choose to use Eskom's electricity. I, as a South African, should have the right to choose whether I use solar electricity, whether I use nuclear electricity, whether I use coal electricity, whether I use gas. I should have the right to choose what kind of electricity I use. And I put it to you that if you ask the majority of South Africans, they would want the right to choose their electricity. Mr. Victor.
Honourable Member, Honourable Mazzoni touched on most of what I wanted to say. Your concern regarding the private, again, the private nature of EMO and the loans that are being obtained from government, your concern there, it's a valid concern. It's a concern that I, as a citizen, would have had as well. How can we have government funding private companies? And on face value, that is what it looks like. But as Honourable Mazzoni had pointed out, and I've mentioned as well, it's not an ordinary private company. It is not a private company where power control is centralized in the private sector. That's not how it works. We have government appointing half the board, which you don't get in another private company. We have government approving appointments that you don't get in another private company. We have government aligning strategy that you don't get in another private company. We have governments approving and providing input with plans, and plans that have to be drafted with the concurrence of the minister that you also don't get in another private company. So I think it would be disingenuous of us to say that this is a private company pure and simple in its absolute purest form, because it's not. It is not a company that is devoid of public interest. It is not a company that is devoid of public participation, and it's also not a company where the executive branch of government will not have a say. It most certainly will. We specifically refer to it as a public-private partnership, and the thing with any partnership is it's a give and take. what the public sector gets, it has to give as well. Same with the private sector. So on the one hand, yes, we have to give in the sense that it is a private company that with the permission of Parliament may obtain loans from government. That's not all. Remember what government gets from this. It gets to appoint the board. It gets to approve appointments. It gets to align strategy. It gets to approve the plans. It also has the power to determine certain conditions for those loans as well. And it's also not a given, because it will have to pass as a special appropriations bill, which, as you know, we've very recently dealt with one in Parliament in respect of the very ISCOM that we are looking at breaking up. It's not a simple matter. It's not a fait accompli right at the start when it's introduced. So it's not as simple as just saying that this is a private company that's getting loans from government, because there's much more to it. By just simplifying and reducing it to a single line is a bit naive. We have to look at it in more detail. We have to look at it from a holistic perspective and consider all the aspects that go into the functioning of IMO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, with your indulgence, I'd actually just like to make a statement before I ask my questions. Many of my honourable members that are on this committee have used the word problematic when they start their questions or their statements. And, you know, I actually find this really, really scary. Many years ago when I was a very young person, if I asked a question, my parents would say, that's what the government says it's got to be. And I wasn't allowed to question it. And I lived overseas for a while, and I came back, and I asked more questions. And my parents were horrified that I would question this big brother called the government that was sitting up there. And that seems to be the thought process, that we cannot question ESCOM, and we cannot question the fact that it must be the entity to provide the supply. You know, in countries where privatization is encouraged, there's a much bigger economic growth than we have here in South Africa. In countries where privatization is encouraged, there's a much higher employment rate. In countries where privatization is encouraged, there's far less poverty. When are we going to take off our blinkers here and stop looking at government institutions like we did in the apartheid era, where they have to be and they are amazing and they revere it? They are not. They are failing us. They are failing every single South African. And it's time for us to say enough. Independent power producers, they are an opportunity for our South African people to get involved in producing that power. They are there to create jobs for our South African people. Why would we want to take that opportunity away from our people? I can't see. You know, and the one honourable member said, we mustn't give it up. We can't allow the... For goodness sake, this is not the apartheid era. It's time for the people to speak, not for us to want to hold on to the power that's obviously not working. And my question that I would just like to ask is, if this bill is approved,
Sir,
how long will it take?
Sir, can I just reason on before Honorable Phillips proceed? That as a member of the committee, we have received a presentation from Honorable Mazon, who are supposed to make inputs, not cast aspersion to what members have said. It's their views. The point I'm making is that what I have said, I will not be happy if it's likened to apartheid, because I have said it. Honorable Phillips must just have a view so that she asks questions, they respond, and then as a committee we'll debate what she is saying now. We have not reached that point, because now to be likened to apartheid is a bit problematic. Chair.
Like I said initially, honorable members, I will make the summary when you are done. Just one thing that I had cautioned is that, and I repeat this, I don't think it would be unfair again to say only honorable Phillips. I understand the opinions of the other people, whether this one is like this. But I've always appealed to members. Questions of clarity to people you have invited, deal with them on the people invited. Debate amongst yourself when those people are no longer there, it's what is allowed. But I can't stop here, because many of them, as I said, some of the things I'll have to allow you to continue at the end, explain sometimes. You know, when we invited stakeholders, I raised the same thing I said. Sometimes the manner in which we approach questions of clarity, we make them a discussion of the committee. When the person we are supposed to be asking questions of clarity, when we sit here now, we process what has been presented to us. We then start to deal with ourselves on how do we look at things as we take our own position. And I've always said, I won't deny a member, with all due respect, Honorable Mazoni, not responding to you so that it's not tomorrow's day. With all due respect, I always say there's not a single member who's in this committee who came through the window. We all came through that door because we voted. We chose to belong to political parties. And that system made us to be here. So I don't want to deal with the debate as if there will be no politics into it. But my only request, honorable members, can we stick to the questions of clarity and then deal with our own issues when we are together? Please. Is that an order now? I thought I was making a ruling.
Oh, okay.
Probably not.
It's just that I'm not taking your job, but I was going to say, please, can you confine ourselves to this thing?
That's
what
I'm trying
to say. About apartheid and what. Because at least here now I was able to ask questions and he was not held. We were killed when you asked questions to the apartheid.
Yes. Okay.
It is not a secret that we hate nationalization. Sorry. Privatization. Because it is capitalism. And capitalism has got one characteristic, the super exploitation in order to get super profits. We are victims. We've been slaves. So let us not go there. Don't tell about...
You know what I'm going to do? I'll do exactly what I told you. I'll just keep quiet. When you are done talking to yourselves, once you are done talking to yourselves, then you must invite me to chair the meeting. I said, honorable members, can we stick to the question? I will deal with some of the things that have prevailed here, including the point that you are raising, because we are saying the same thing. Can we exercise a little bit of patience and tolerance, and then we'll deal with some of these issues? Can you continue, Honorable Phillips?
Thank you, Chair.
I don't want, for instance, when we finish here, we must also look at the time. We end up, because of what we did, we're completely defocused, we're not dealing with the real issue, and then at the end of the day, we deal with half-big things. I'm going to deal with some, remain patient, I'm going to deal with some of the things that are happening. But dear Honorable Phillips.
Thank you. My questions are as follows. The first one is, with the Competition Commission that exists at the moment, have authority over ruling on any price fixing that would happen there. So, in other words, would they have some authority there? That's my first one. My second question is, how will we be able to encourage our local entrepreneurs to become part of those independent power producers? And my third question is, was there any study done to see what kind of cost saving this model would mean for electricity in South Africa to the South African citizens. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Philip, there are various means at our disposal to ensure that we wouldn't have price fixing. One of them is NERSA, and the other one would be the Competition Commission. It's not excluded from the Act, so we would expect the Competition Commission to exercise their duty as they do across the board in South Africa. What incentives would we have? Well, imagine a rural village that exists somewhere where the wind blows quite regularly, and two wind turbines are put up in that particular village. And it's enough electricity, creates enough electricity to power the village as well as to feed back onto the grid. That could be an incentive for that specific village to become an IPP in and of itself. International companies have shown interest as well as companies within South Africa. In fact, I was at a presentation not too long ago where we were going into the thousands of South African companies that were interested in the IPP market. So never get bogged down with certain big names that we hear that surround IPPs that are popular names and perhaps famous names in the South African political sphere and involvements that they have in IPPs. IPPs spread exceptionally wide, and the market is huge. Now, because the market is huge, you have the incentive of job creation, because if you set up an IPP producing factory, for lack of a better term, so, you know, a factory that produces electricity, it will require employment to build, it will require maintenance, and it will require people to actually operate the specific area. So job creation is a massive incentive. Then in terms of cost saving, regardless of what anyone says, it's proved no matter where you are in the world, competition drives prices down. And it drives prices down because someone will come to your front door and say, Ms. Phillips, I'm selling gas and this is my price. And 10 minutes later, someone will come to your door and say, Ms. Phillips, I'm selling coal, electricity, and this is my price. And then someone will come to your door and say, Ms. Phillips, I'm selling wind electricity, and this is my price. And you, as a citizen, will be able to choose what kind of electricity you wish to purchase long-term. That's the eventual game, is that long-term everyone will be able to choose what kind of electricity they want to purchase. But the cost saving will be, especially in the metropolitan municipalities, by cutting out the middleman, it immediately brings the pricing down because you've cut out the middleman. And if you read in the Act, it's detailed as to how the middleman's cut out, and the cost savings will be beneficial not only to business in our country, but to private citizens too.
Okay. Honorable Chairman.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Well, we welcome the presentation of the proposed bill. But as much as my fellow honorables have said here, much has been said already. There's no more much things to be said as such, except the fact that the reality is that this is just this is only the attempt to increase the stake of IPP through this bill. This is how we see it. Now, this committee represent the government or the state, and the state represent the people of South Africa. So we are here in this committee
as government representative, representing the people of South Africa, especially the poor and the vulnerable. Before we come here, Chairperson, we were once confronted with issues like privatization and all those things, where we come from. We know what privatization is, from where we come from. So we cannot then come here as a committee and allow the very same privatization to come back, and we as a committee sit here and accept and approve it. What are we going to tell the people who sent us to come and represent them here? Because we know that this is the only plan to unbundle Eskom. So a lot have been said here. The honorable member, our honorable member, she said that in the olden days when she was questioning the government of the day, that was the apartheid government in those times, she was not allowed. We are not sure whether they were allowed or not, but we all know that the very government of apartheid used to run Eskom, and Eskom was very successful. Eskom once used to be the biggest power supplier, if you may call it, in those days. So that tells us that it is not the state that is failing Eskom, or this way or that. The only problem with Eskom, because we all, you see, this thing we must all begin by saying, we all agree that indeed Eskom is in a wrong state where it is now. It's bankrupt through the state capture and everything, of which we agree. We must not be seen as if we are saying the state capture is fine and everything. No, we know that the state capture is not fine, and the Eskom is what it is today because of the state capture. That's what we know. But that does not necessarily also mean that we must solve a problem by creating another problem, because by creating privatization, then you are creating more problem. I'm not sure the honorable member, what does he mean when he said Imo is private but not private enough. If I heard him correctly, he said it was private but not necessarily private, this and that. Private is private if you know how to define the word private. There is no way a thing can be private, little bit private, but not more private. There's no such a thing. Private is private, and if something is private, it's not what this government is standing for, or it's not what the people of South Africa instead send us to come here and represent them for. We can't represent private things here. Here we represent public things. That is why as much as she said already, of course, that we are from the different political backgrounds, she should know enough that, obvious, we are here to promote something that will then come back and help the people, mostly nationalization, if we may call it that way. But now, not privatization. We can't come here and start talking about privatization. So much has been said, Chairperson. But really, indeed, we do not agree. Much as they have agreed, or with the minister, or the minister seemed to like it and stuff, the honorable member has said it earlier on that, of course, the minister can, because this is a committee now, the committee cannot necessarily do or agree with the minister when he said, that is why himself also, he must come here sometimes and an account to this committee. So in other words, this committee is a committee, minister is a minister, but as a committee, we don't necessarily also we'll have to agree with things that we know, that these things are not going to benefit the very people of South Africa who sent us to come and represent them here. So in short, Chairperson, much has a lot have been said, but then we are seeing it in that manner that we cannot then agree to issues of privatization, because privatization is the most evil or devil of the people of South Africa, especially the poor and the vulnerable. The most evil. They don't want to hear anything about those. So if there are people whom she said that, Ms. Mazzotti said, there are people who agree with this idea, it should be then the very few people who already were favored even by the very system of apartheid before. So those people are not representing the masses of South Africa, which are now, as we speak, are vulnerable and very poor. So we can't subject them to such a thing. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. The Honourable Member raises a lot of issues, mostly around ideologies. Firstly, I'd like to state that the committee does not represent the state. The committee represents Parliament. The state is represented by the executive. So the minister represents the state. In actual fact, each one of us sitting in here as members of Parliament represents, according to the last election, roughly 47,000 voters. So that's who we represent, each one of us in this room. I most certainly do not represent the state, and neither does any other member of Parliament. Now, undoubtedly, there is going to be an ideological battle, and I welcome that battle, because, Honourable Member, I certainly don't subscribe to your ideology. I never will, and I find your ideology offensive. So I'm very glad that you and I are at loggerheads when it comes to this particular bill, because I know that I've done my job correctly, because the 47,000 South Africans who voted me in have voted me to ensure that I stop nationalisation at all costs. And I put it to you that there is not a company in this country that is nationalised that isn't bankrupt. South African Airways is bankrupt. Denel is bankrupt. SA Express is bankrupt. Alexco is bankrupt. Safco is bankrupt. Eskom is bankrupt. So I think that perhaps ideology needs to have a look at why nationalisation in this country isn't working. And I do think that you make one interesting point, and I have to agree with you as much as I didn't want to agree with you. You are quite right when you say that it's not the country that breaks the nationalised company. It's the government. And there you are quite right. The government has broken our state-owned entities because they allowed state capture. So there you are quite right. What I am saying is when the government controls everything, the people have absolutely no control. And I come from a background where I don't want my government to control everything. I believe in the rights of the individual. And as an individual, and as an individual who was voted in by at least 47,000 South Africans to speak on their behalf, they also believe in the rights of the individual. And you might call that the evil. I call it the right to choose. So I won't stand here and allow myself to be demonized for what I believe in. I believe very strongly in my principles. And as you know, Honourable Member, nothing upsets me more than when you call me a neoliberal. Because I'm not a neoliberal. I'm a classic liberal. And I'm very proud to be a classic liberal. And as such, my primary focus is the right of the individual and the right of choice. And I've seen what my government has done to people. Now, I want to say this. You are quite right. Again, didn't want to agree with you, but I have to. When you say that Eskom used to be a shining star and used to work very well. Eskom used to work very well because it was centered around creating electricity for 5 million people. That's why it worked. It wasn't designed to create electricity for 57 million South Africans. So it was actually a gross abomination of the government because it wasn't creating energy for all South Africans. It was only creating electricity, and I have to be blunt about this, for white South Africans. So you cannot now look back and say, yes, it worked very well. it worked because it was one of the grossest parts of apartheid South Africa. It created electricity only for white South Africans. And that is disgusting in its very nature. So what Eskom should have done is when the white paper was introduced in 1994 to look at how we could expand Eskom to create electricity for 57 million South Africans, we should have looked at expanding Eskom then and changing the structure of Eskom then. But you are right, and I take you back to your point about the government. It was a lot more easy to keep Eskom as a cash cow and sell pieces of Eskom off to the highest bidder when it came to state capture. And it was only thanks to the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises that we managed to expose that gross abomination of Eskom. So we've had two governments, two political parties, the National Party and then the ANC, who ensured that Eskom was an abomination in different forms. So you are quite right there. And that is a fact that we cannot ignore, regardless of whether or not we put pragmatism forward or we put logic forward. But where I cannot agree with you is when you say that nationalization is the answer to the poorest of the poor. In actual fact, nationalization has resulted in South Africa not only becoming poorer, but people now living in abject poverty in our country. Because while money should be being spent on housing, on social development, on the provision of water and electricity, that money is being used to bail out our nationalized entities, such as South African Airways, Denel, Alexco, Safco, and Eskom. Can you imagine what South Africa could do with 420 billion rand? I could. And I think that if you went to the most vulnerable in this country and you didn't scaremonger and you didn't tell them falsities about the evil capital giant that was going to come and take over their company and the devil that is privatization. And I think that if you told them that the state currently runs Eskom and the state has resulted in Eskom owing 420 billion rand, the poorest of the poor would say, do anything you can in your power to make sure that the government cannot have their hands on this particular entity and waste more of the money that we require to simply live. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Chairperson. Let me acknowledge the presentation. I'm very confused because apartheid was inflicted by white people. DA comes from the Nationalist Party, so I'm a bit lost, but I don't want.
Chairperson, on a point of order. Chairperson, on a point of order, the National Party joined the ANC. The Democratic Alliance is not founded on a National Party principle. Thank you.
Can you allow me to manage my meeting? Can you continue, Honorable Malinga? We'll deal with some of the issues. I'm very patient.
Thank you, Chairperson. The 8 years as a shadow minister in the public enterprise, the troubles in Eskom did not start yesterday or February when this bill was brought to Parliament. 8 years. 420 billion rands did not come today or in February 2019. So the Honorable Member, I am wondering, why didn't she bring this to Parliament? That will be my first question, Chair, because I don't know whether it's there in the archives of Parliament because I'm new. Maybe I will have time to go and look into it. Chairperson, since this morning, we've been told about state capture this. State capture started long time ago when majority of the people of South Africa were never given electricity. Umbani slalo, thina siyakwazi ukukhuba ngaphambo ngaphandle kombani. Besikhanyisa ngezingodo. siyakwazi ukuthi ingane zethu, our children will eat, you go make fire outside. But we move with technology. It's not as if it's what? A Christmas present. Ha. And a chairperson, I don't understand. You see, I'm like Mtenja. You say private is private. Rather, if they had said private public thing, partnership, okay, it's triple P, partnership. Because here you say this emo can borrow money from the state. You're saying it's not private just because the minister or the department will appoint the five people. Then what is the role of the Department of Energy? Because it means that department no longer has a role. And the chairperson, what we have adopted, or the Minister of Mineral Resources has just put out there, the IRP. The IRP provides for these IPPs. What's the need of this IMO? I just don't understand that one, chairperson. And if we ask questions here, we ask questions because we don't want to be confused. We don't want to grandstand as people who just want to make noise and do that. We can't be bringing bills and bills and bills and not putting anything. Minister of Public Enterprises, the way to go, I think they consulted on this one, is to unbundle ESCOM. Why can't we give that unbundling a chance? And this bill, now we are unbundling ESCOM, then you bring the bill here and say that's not gonna save ESCOM from what it has happened to it. ESCOM was looted, all of us agree here. But all of us were here. And unfortunately, the people who looted ESCOM are the people who knew the ways and methods to loot ESCOM. Some of us, we did not even know. And we are not in the Zondo Commission that will be talking about state capture. I'm not appointed to sit and talk about state capture here. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Let me do this, Honorable Mazoni, just before you come in. I'm doing this thing so that next time honorable members will understand. One, there is a procedure, there are rules adopted by the House. Those rules allow any member, if I'm not mistaken, it started with a woman, the late Miario Ambrose, on the what today the Constitutional Court has ruled in his favor later on. So first, let's deal with this issue. It is allowed. There are procedures to be followed. We should have to deal with them. But thirdly, my appeal, no, it's nice to have politics. Frankly, sitting here and chairing, you can see that members are sitting aiming. Oh, he said this, or she said this. When I come in, I'm coming in with this. And frankly speaking, we end up not talking to what is on the table. I'm afraid I will make this of these things. I don't want to preempt now to say what could be the risk. There is something in Zulu that is sufike kanjani. How did we happen to be here? My main worry is that we'll end up not talking to what is being proposed as a bill or seeking clarity on what the bill contains, and probably reach another part. I don't want to answer the point, Honorable Tenjan and Honorable Mazoni. You'll bear with me, Honorable Mazoni. The issue of Mazoni is more popular in my mind. It may be wrong. It will take time for me to change from what
I'm used to. But being the case as it may, we can sit here, whether we can succeed to make an ideological interpretation of the state, whether we represent what and so forth. But the truth of the matter is not on the bill. That is not on the bill. What is in the bill are substantive issues. We can make a Marxist interpretation of the state and we can make a liberal interpretation of the state, but it's not addressing what is in the bill. I sincerely and honestly appeal that for me a question of clarity might be different from an opinion position that I hold. And I think mostly the position I hold, it is a subject of what next then will have to happen. So that my interpretation of what is presented, you can present something that I completely disagree, but it may give me more of an informed attitude towards it and deal with it at that stage. So I don't want to deal with the issue. Marx interpret the state differently from your contextual interpretation, but there seems to be convergence on what constitutes the state. That's why we sometimes talk about the three arms of the state. Otherwise, with one, it doesn't constitute a state. There is that general view. And amongst those is that part of that is what we are supposed to be. So I really, really appeal, Honorable Member. This is my appeal and request. Let's try by all means to deal with the real matter in the House. But I don't want to deal with other issues. I prefer that. But I thought I must just foreground this thing. That I don't like when I, at the end of the meeting, you then say, okay, this is what we're dealing with. And then you realize, no, in fact, we did almost a quarter of what we should have done. The rest we spent on each other. I'm just appealing so that any other person who comes and present, we get that clearance. We then have, I always say, we then have got our own time. When we say, now presentations are made, questions of clarity have been asked, now what do we do? And this is what I said, I will then outline at what then should be the process to follow. But before I say so, let me allow you, Honorable Mazoni, to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. And Chairperson, of course, when you deliberate with your committee, we will leave because we're in conflict of interest, and we will leave you to deliberate with your committee without us interfering. Honorable Member, thank you for informing me that you are a new member. I will, through the permission of the chairperson, I will send you every transcript of every speech I've ever given in the House where I have dealt with ESCOM and the problems facing ESCOM, including the last three SONA debates in which I took part. I was also nominated and won Changemaker of the Year by Lead SA 2018 for my work done with ESCOM, so this isn't the first time
Chair.
That I've brought up ESCOM.
Chairperson, I'm funny CV. CV, Mina. Not interested.
No. Honorable Malinga, the point, that's why I said. The point would be based on the fact that there was. Honorable Malinga, please. Can you please respect the meeting? The point is that, and I don't want to answer on behalf of Honorable Mazoni, but the question would have been, for the past 8 years, what is it that you have been doing? Because this thing is not new. Now, that is why I said, if we focus our questions on the issue that is presented to us, can we then deal with that? Continue, Honorable Mazoni.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you for your protection.
Chairperson.
I find this quite bizarre.
Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, this thing is giving us a problem here. Because Because then why can't she go and organize those people who she was with here for the past 8 years? Then they can talk
Honorable,
Chairperson, if we allow this thing to carry on, then that will make us useless here. Because
Honorable,
we are new, then we can't talk what if she's wrong, we can't oppose when
Honorable,
she's wrong.
Honorable,
because we are new.
Honorable,
it can't be correct, Chairperson.
I'm dealing with Honorable Mutenza. Honorable Mutenza, can you allow Honorable Mazoni to continue? I explained what I understand to be the context of what he's saying. I don't remember where she said you cannot make a comment because you are new. I don't remember. Now, can you be fair and stick to the meeting? And I will repeat this thing. If all of us will focus, we will not have to make ruling on side issues that are not necessarily in the presentation made. Can you continue?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I was answering the question, what have I done for the past 8 years, because that's what the member asked me. And I answered her. I certainly don't want the Honourable Member to be confused. I have asked Honourable Victor to put slide 11 back up on the screen for the Honourable Member. And if you read point number 2, the objects of the EMO Bill, it says constitute EMO as a private company governed in terms of the public-private partnership. And that's what the Member said she would like to see in the Bill. And I assure you, Honourable Member, it is in the Bill. It's on the presentation. You have it in front of you on page 11 on the second bullet point. So that particular point has been covered. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of questions and... Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of questions and comments. There seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding in this committee of public-private partnerships. And I'm not going to debate it now. Sorry, Chair. I want to make a proposal. I want to make a proposal that going forward, before we debate this bill as a committee, that we get National Treasury, their public-private partnership unit, which is a division of National Treasury, to come and give us a presentation of what the rules are for public-private partnerships and how they are governed and what the role is. I'm sorry, Chair. But she's just yelling,
order, Chair.
Chairperson,
this person cannot cast suspicions that we don't understand triple P. No, Chair. What if there is a general confusion on the private-public partnership in this committee? No, Chair.
Can I help you again? The comment was there seems to be a misunderstanding of public-private partnership. Then do I have to rule, Honorable Mandinga, or must just leave it? Because you raised a point of order. The next thing, you are not listening to that point of order. Now,
Chairperson, we can...
Can I finish what I'm ruling on as a point of order? Now, I'm saying there is that issue that Honorable Mailam is raising as a proposal to the committee. I'm not going to rule out, when in the same way you said initially, I'm not going to rule out and close the meeting because he's making a proposal in the meeting. And if I allow it to be concluded in the way that he says, it will mean it's a position of the committee. Members will be allowed to say, on this proposal, we're objecting to it because, let me be upfront, we clearly understand the public-private partnership, and therefore we see no need to bring in the issue of the treasury to talk to us about that. None of us have said don't understand it. So please, Honorable Sam, say, can you apply? I said I'm a chair, I'm not a mediator, I'm not a facilitator. Now let me take the point of what is the order, Honorable Chandler.
Yeah, actually I wanted to clarify that and just that which what you just said. But now to add on that also, Chairperson, the Honorable Member here is part of the committee. It was supposed to be said maybe by those who are presenting their proposal.
Can I rule?
So not him also now coming again and tell us that we don't
can
understand this issue.
Honorable Mayor, please. You know, when we sit in the committee, we say even, you see, let me say this thing. I always warn you this thing. You can do this thing in this committee, but be careful that tomorrow it's going to be done from the other side and you will become very intolerant of those people. Our gestures as members of parliament must reflect the respect we give due to our people. Please, can you continue, Honorable Mylan?
Sorry, Chair, I'm not sure what gesture I have.
No, but
again,
you know what?
I apologize if it was an unnecessary gesture. I apologize. So my proposal was that we get National Treasury's Public-Private Participation Unit to come and give us a presentation as to how PPPs should work, what their role is, and what government's role is, so that we understand how it applies in this particular instance. Chair, then there was a comment made about the need to move with technology. And in this regard, I'd like some clarification from Honorable Mazzoni and Mr. Victor about what this will mean for the grid, given that our grid was built, I don't know, 40, 50 years ago. What does the EMO bill mean for our grid and technology and our ability to transmit and distribute electricity? There was also a comment earlier about the need to possibly resuscitate the ISMO bill. And frankly, the ISMO bill isn't on the table. We have the EMO bill in front of us at the moment, so we're not considering the ISMO bill. I'd like some clarity as to whether there is, and I don't know who to ask this of. I don't know if I would guess this goes to the department, but they're not commenting today. Whether there is any intention or any plans to resuscitate ISMO, or if this is what we have on the table right now, is what we're working with. And maybe Honorable Mazzoni can answer that. The last thing that I'd like to ask about is this. One of the challenges that we have, and the comment was made about Soweto and the 16 billion rand plus that Soweto owes Eskom. But one of the challenges that we have is that municipalities frequently are not responsible for the distribution of electricity in their own municipal areas, Soweto being an example, where Eskom supplies electricity directly to that community, which then makes it problematic for Eskom to apply free basic services on the one hand, but it also makes it problematic for the municipalities to recover revenue on the other hand. How does EMO address that problem? In other words, are you proposing that EMO would sell to the municipality who would then take responsibility for all distribution within the municipal area? I just need some clarity on that. Thank you, Chair. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Marlam. Cute, sir. Chair, upgrade of the grid is essential. We are going through a technological change. Our grid is outdated, but this must be placed on the table. Our grid is a national asset. We have an exceptionally good grid, and it's a grid that is world class. And with the Emo Bill, one of the interesting points of it is that the grid will remain a national asset. And it is important that the grid remains a national asset, because the sovereignty of a country can actually be determined by the safety of its grid. So what will have to happen is, and it hasn't happened enough, the grid needs to upgrade. And as technology moves and things like battery storage becomes a possibility and all sorts of things develop, I mean, I don't need to tell you, you're the Energy Committee. You know exactly what's going on in the energy sector a lot more than I will ever know. But the grid has to be upgraded, and the grid will remain a national asset. So that has to happen. In terms of the ISMO Bill, ISMO was on the table for as long as I have been a Member of Parliament, which is since 2009. It was spoken about in every SONA, in every debate we ever had. And we would push and push and push for ISMO to be introduced. In 2014, with no explanation, ISMO was withdrawn. So when a bill is withdrawn, such as ISMO, it not only lapses as a bill, it ceases to exist. So ISMO no longer exists. There is no ISMO. So when I looked at how we could facilitate the improvement of the South African grid, we sat down and we looked at ISMO, and we realized that ISMO couldn't even be reintroduced because it's gone beyond that point. It's completely lapsed, and it would take a restructuring. It would have to be re-gazetted. It would have to go through all the processes of Parliament once again. So it was the perfect opportunity to take a document that the base of the document had been approved not only by the Energy Committee at the time, but by Parliament as a whole, and work from that to improve, in our opinion, what you know, to keep up with the times, a holistic approach to improving ISMO. And that's why this particular bill is not called ISMO, it's called EMO. So the ISMO bill is not in existence. So we speak about a non-existent bill because ISMO doesn't exist. So if, for example, the Honourable Member was to ask for ISMO to be reintroduced, he couldn't. It would have to literally start ab initio from the very beginning, and it would have to be redrafted, sent to the state law advisors for certification. It would then have to go into the Government Gazette. So for all intents and purposes, we shouldn't speak about ISMO because it doesn't exist. And then Marius is going to answer your question about the direct supply to municipalities.
Honourable Member, just to touch on that, taking direct sales, if we envisage a situation where Eskom no longer directly sells to an end user, the question, as you very rightfully pointed out, was who will then take care of that distribution? And the slide, let me just, there, still provides for municipalities to take charge of the end distribution factor. So what we're going to be doing here is EMO will be transmitting and selling to municipalities who already have the necessary billing infrastructure in place, because they have to collect rates and taxes. So they already have billing infrastructure in place, and this will then just form a part of that. So they will then, in the end, be selling it to the end user. So that infrastructure already exists, that functionality already exists, so we don't see that there will be an issue if we take direct sales away from Eskom.
Okay. Honourable members, let me start here. We have not concluded. We are not even closer to the stage where we will have discussion. There's still a long way to follow. One is that we still have to invite the department to see what is its stage. Based on having, it would have been nice, I must say, now I can see at this juncture, it would have been nice if we had both the delegation in terms of the private members bill making that presentation and get the department's version or perspective on the matter, because it would have assisted now to understand the approach That is the first point I want to say. The second point is that having received the presentations, both the Honorable Mazoni and from the department, it's going to be this committee now where we will discuss the aspects of the proposed private members bill in relation to what would have been the presentation of it. We take a decision there. I don't want to preempt now, but the possibility, like you said, Honorable Mazoni, if I borrow your word with all due respect, on the question of desirability, we will then discuss whether is the bill desirable or not, amongst other issues, and be able to state what is it that makes us to come to that conclusion. And having said so, two processes are possible. I'm not preempting. Is that if we take a decision there, we will then have to go and account to the House as to why we take this decision that the bill is not desirable. Alternatively, if we then agree there is a need to entertain more, we will look at the processes, the breach of agreement of public participation, whether it is only limited to internal parliamentary process. I want to choose my words very carefully, because I'll say something, whether it's limited to parliamentary process, or, which I don't think it affects much, some may have a difference of opinion, but will also be guided by Parliament, whether it will require a full-scale public participation because of its impact. So I'm saying those are the possibilities that we'll be looking at. Now, talking to it, it is only then when we would have received again, we may come to this conclusion that this is not going to be, or this is going to be the process. The issue then, I want to clarify this thing. The issue then is that the point that Honorable Mailem was talking about, I want to take out the question of people misunderstanding what public private partnership. But the point is, if we go that route, any of the people who have got an interest, I must say, that's my assumption, will be also allowed to make their presentation, including if those want to clarify on the question of public-private partnership. That will be allowed. So I want us to clarify. The last issue on this point, Honorable Mason, I don't want, because I was very, very careful when I chair my meeting. There is no decision for now that there must be some information supplied to members. I'm doing this thing because in the records it must be clear. But I can't sit in here as a chair and say if there is a feeling that the member has to get some information from you. So that there's a difference between what the committee would have requested and asked for and what you volunteered to share with the member. That issue is not part of the committee. But, like I said before, the issue of the bill, the only bill now that is referred to us as a committee is the EMO bill. That is only, unfortunately, as a committee of parliament, we can't talk about any other thing except what is in front of you. We will hear from the department, and the issue will then be determined whether the department can bring in something when there is something similar. I procedure, and I don't know how do you handle that. But we'll deal with it when the department makes its presentation. But at this stage, there's only one, and that we'll have to respond to. But my worry, which when I said, and please, and I always say, help me as a chair to understand and stick to the text. My fear as we are beginning to share was that, with all due respect to Honorable Tejan and Honorable Mazoni, how do I chair and resolve between nationalization and privatization and all these sorts of things? Unfortunately, I cannot make a ruling which one is better than the other. I'm just making an example. Even if I believe in one of the two, but from where I sit as a chair, all of you honorable members, when you speak, you must make it a point that you assist the chairperson. It's a plea that I make. I would wish and I would hope that when we then continue with the discussion, we'll stick to the... You see, some of the things, I'm very skeptical. Sitting as a chair, I'm very skeptical. I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about ESCOM, but I'm very skeptical to talk about ESCOM to a point where there is no relevancy for the Committee of Public Enterprise. And some of the things that we are going to are at the heart of what the Committee on Public Enterprise is dealing with. That is the technicality with ESCOM. We are caught in between policy and operations when it comes to ESCOM. And probably is one of the things we might have to take into cognizance as we move forward, whether in to manage that process, we should not consider what role or how do we deal with the committee. I'm not saying that's what we will do or will agree, but my fear is that ESCOM by, as an entity, by policy we make a determination, but how ESCOM operates and other things, regrettably, is not accounting to us. And this is what we have said as a discussion. So I'm saying there is a thin line that from where I sit I must manage. That tomorrow I don't get the chairperson of public enterprise and say, hey, the way you were discussing ESCOM, then what's the point of us being a committee? Because we are dealing with issues that we are responsible for when it comes to ESCOM. So you must also please bear with me that when I try to manage and drive to the legislation, I'm driving it to policy so that I don't transcend to a territory that belongs to public enterprise. That's the scary part when it comes to the issue of ESCOM. But also, I would love that as we continue with the process, we continue in such a manner that our own discussion is not on the peripheral issues. You know, there are people I always tell, they can tell you the truth about yourself and say it joking and smiling at you. But there are people who can say the right thing, besides that the way that you are frowning, although you say the right thing, it doesn't take it correct. My appeal to honorable members is that let's do everything because we're here for politics. Let's do everything here with an understanding that not just as people from we come from different political backgrounds and with different understandings. And anything we present here is a contested matter. I must close on this thing with one issue. All of us here, and I repeat this thing, all of us here are representatives of the people. Let the people see themselves on us. Let us, man, I repeat this thing that I said one day. I said I do not want to be in the same way the presiding officers in the National Assembly sometimes find themselves in. Because I always maintain one thing, in order for you to do right things in the National Assembly, you must go through a early childhood development course to understand the different minds of how kids as they grow behave. And I don't want to be like them. We are all matured here. We are all coming here with an understanding that none, if we have got time to play, it's up to us. But none of us here, who is a responsible citizen, and I always say that there is none who doesn't have a kid. When we are sitting here, let our people reflect on us. Let our people see that we are grappling with serious issues, not amongst ourselves, but in the best interest of who they are. So I will never tell a member of parliament to leave or ignore. When we use Numalo in the case of them nowadays, we used to say, no, 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 don't worry, remain and retain the IFP, but go and vote for the ANC. I will not say that here. Keep your political party, keep your everything, but the moment you enter that door and sit and be a member of the committee, let it guide you on how do you deal with the management of the meeting. That is the reason I've been insisting to say I'm not a mediator. I can't deal with behavioral patterns of people. I must deal with the substantive submissions that people are making in the committee. Otherwise, I'll go online. If my responsibility is to be a mediator and a facilitator, I'll be a bad chairperson. Because I'm not used to that. So please, honorable members, I beg all of us, let's focus. Honorable Mazoni, thank you very much. This is part of what we are combating. And I always say, with all due respect, for me sitting here as a chair, I didn't want, and I'm frank, I didn't want a bill from a person from the DA. The truth of the matter is that the rules of parliament and the people of South Africa who voted us, they knew that we were coming here and were different. But we have to do the work that they expect from us. So we will do everything possible. We will stick to the best procedures. We will then come back and take a decision. Like you have said, fortunately, you know, we will take decisions at this committee on how do we think first, how to handle the bill, and what next has to be done. But the final stage is not going to be this committee. The only thing this committee would do is to make recommendations, agreement or disagreement, it will make recommendations. It is only the National Assembly that will finally make a determination as a decision of the House. Thank you very much with your presentation. We will do our level best. I'm guided in this committee, at least a little bit privileged, let alone there's an additional parliamentary advisor. Now I've got two secretaries, and they will guide me. So if anything goes wrong, it might have been an administrative advice that did not go correct. Thank you very much. Honorable member.
We are going for the minute. You want us to go for the minute now? I'm looking at the time, it's 10 to 1. I'm at your meeting. Let us not discuss what other people are talking
about. Sure. Let's go to the minute and deal with them. But I just thought before we do that, I just want you to check something for the committee moving forward. If a private member presenting can be allowed to raise an order on honorable members, even if they are a member but they are coming to present something, if you can check that rule for us so that when we go forward, we are clear on what we are doing.
Let me call the suggestion. Any objection to us going for the minute? Okay.
The presentation on the agreement, page 1. Page 2. Page 3.
Page 3, Chair.
Yes.
First bullet. Delayed due to A. I forgot A2.
They say due to, okay, but it's fine.
Okay.
It still makes sense.
No, it doesn't.
Due to a...
Yeah, due to. Yes.
So, due to what happened? Page 5.
Any mover?
The only thing I saw.
The only thing I saw, maybe Ariko and Ayanda, they were making the work much more easier for them. They've decided to take out J and just put K Milan. Maybe they were running away from...
Not only a change,
okay, Honorable Matawle.
Before we adopt, if my memory serves me well, Honorable Soanyani was in the meeting. And that should reflect. And with those changes, Chair, I would want to move for an adoption of the minutes.
Okay.
Yes, both of them.
Okay. Any matter? Any agenda? Honorable Mellon.
Just second the minute.
Thank you. I'm joking, please don't end this tomorrow.
Next.
Okay. Okay. Any matters arising?
Chair, there was a resolution on page 4, item 5, where the resolution was that the information requested by myself from the Strategic Fuel Fund should be forwarded to the committee. Could we just action that and ensure that information is forthcoming? I have not received any correspondence whatsoever from the SFF, either in my personal capacity or as a committee member.
On page 4,
minutes of the 20th, page 1.
Okay. At the top of page 1, it's Wednesday, the 20th of November.
Chair.
Honorable Malenga.
Bullet 2. The DMRE stated that the Council of Geoscience was requested to embark on a research project to identify new technologies to prevent acid mine drainage.
Then we go to page 3. Honorable Marshall.
On bullet point 2, I think the sentence itself necessitates that impossible becomes impossible.
Okay.
No, I move for the adoption of the ministry.
Chair, I second the adoption of the minutes.
Okay. Any matters arising? Only one honorable member, and I must say it because it happened in the in this. In the meeting we had, there was an incident towards the end. I didn't take the issue. There was a point from the chair which I said it requires clarity from the house chair, because at that time I didn't check the rules. And I will await the response of the house chair. When there was a complete exchange, even amongst members, I had requested Honorable Mailam to withdraw the statement. And when he said he's not going to withdraw, I couldn't take action, because I was trying to check what do the rules say. I've since then, so that even for future references, sought an advice and counseling from the house chairperson that what happens in a meeting where a member doesn't accept the ruling of the chairperson, especially to withdraw a statement. I will await. I didn't want to deal with the substantive issues. It's only on the powers of the chair, of chairing a committee, without going to the merits and so forth, that what then happens, so that in future I would know what is expected to do with regards to that. So I've done it in writing so that it is a point of reference. I've not received the response for now. I've not seen the response for now. But when it is given, I will then share it with the committee what the response is. That is the only issue I sought guidance on. And honorable members, having said so, we will be guided. One, we have just sent the gave you the program, which is subject now, because we are told, I must say, by especially the house chairperson and the speaker, that we must prioritize the bills. Any bill, pre ambulance the department. There are probably three issues that might make ourselves to be our heads down. One, there is something that was sent to the speaker on international agreements, ne? And it's sent to this committee that we are supposed to attend to. Secondly, is this private member's bill. I'm not sure. I saw yesterday in the business day, and probably I'll need somewhere if it's going to come here, they can help me. Something that says they are, please, if I choose the right word, I've not inquired.
there are amendments suggested on the petroleum and what. Yes. But it's not coming now purely as that emphasis, but there are proposals that are being made. I think the department had put up now for public comments. That would mean it is highly probably and highly possible. I'm just taking it from a distance where I saw it, that there is a potential again that we will be followed by proposed amendments to an act which will be in the form of an amendment. That is what I know, and we will then look at it again. It will require that it is prioritized by this committee if it comes in front of the committee. That is the one thing. I can't say the draft bill is what, but what I saw yesterday, still have to make follow-ups, but I'm just alerting members to be aware that there could be more of the bills, including this one, coming. You wanted to make a comment, Honorable Mellon.
Chair, I just want to help you out on that and see amendments to the draft. Well, it's the amendments to the regulations of the MPRDA. So it's not actually legislation, it's regulatory amendments. But I do think that we as a committee should review those amendments once the final draft is available.
Chair, I just want to say we welcome the suggestion by the Honorable Chair of Chairs and the Speaker. But it must be borne in mind that we have been talking about entities that we don't even know, we have not visited. So that must be in their mind as well, to say if we speak about the legalization of illegal miners, what do we mean? How do they mine? Where do they do such things? So it's very important so that when we assist the department here in oversight, we know what we're talking about. There's no disjuncture between what we're talking about and what the reality is.
No. I agree with what you say, unfortunately, but the powers that be say prioritize legislation. And unfortunately, the permit to go out, we get granted by them. So whatever we do, they will be asking us, we will try and work out a program that accommodates the process of dealing with legislation, but also focus on oversight. I'm saying this thing, Babu Mtenjan, because the department is not here. One of the things that you will be seized with, I know you are very passionate and correctly so. I was so disappointed myself, when was it, to see what has happened in Lily Mine. Almost the same thing in, what is this place, in Optima. This issue of business rights to practitioners. When companies had already been granted the mining right and everything, then one business rights to practitioner goes to court, makes the court to overturn. I would want to suggest also that we speak to the department, again, Parliament allows us so that when some of these things, like Honorable Masaule says, when some of these court cases are taking place, at least two or so members must be allowed to go and see what is happening. Because in my view, one of the things that the department has to consider as a high priority is how to manage that thing. It's painful. But again, I hope what Honorable Mylam talks about in relation to the regulations, they will be able to accommodate for some of these gaps that are in our legislation. But having said that, Honorable Members, hopefully if we don't see each other, we don't know what will be the process of Parliament that will be guided. But if we happen to meet next year, please enjoy the festive season. Bamufundi, Tshisho, pray for this committee. That when they come back, we find the repentant souls of the Almighty. But on a serious note, Honorable Members, take a rest, but not away from your people. Enjoy the festive, but don't overindulge. We want to see you back next year, all in one piece, not in pieces, and at peace, not at war. Thank you very much. See you next year, if so.